Hello, and thanks for joining Wicker Park Lutheran Church Sermons. Wicker Park Lutheran Church is a diverse ELCA Lutheran congregation in the Wicker Park neighborhood of Chicago. We gather at 10 a.m. to fully live into our incarnational faith as we experience God's presence in the gathered assembly, and we welcome you to join us. In just a moment, you'll first hear with a gospel reading from the associated sermon for the service that you're about to listen to. We hope that that gospel gives you some context before you jump right into the sermon. Thanks for checking us out, and we hope to see you soon.
The Holy Gospel according to St. John. Glory to you, O Lord. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him,
"Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?"
Jesus answered,
"Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed to him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world."
When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with his saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him,
"Go, wash in the pool of Siloam,"
which means sent. Then he went, and he washed, and he came back, able to see. The neighbors and those who had seen him before, the beggar, began to ask,
"Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?"
Some were saying,
"It is he."
Others were saying,
"No, but it is someone like him."
He kept saying,
"I am the man."
But they kept asking him,
"Then how were your eyes opened?"
"The man called Jesus made mud, spread it on my eyes, and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' Then I went and washed and received my sight."
"Where is he?"
"I do not know."
They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also began to ask him how he received his sight. He said to them,
"He put mud on my eyes, then I washed, and now I see."
Some of the Pharisees said,
"This man is not from God, for he does not observe the Sabbath."
But others said,
"How can a man who is a sinner perform such signs?"
And they were divided. So they said again to the blind man,
"What do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened."
"He is a prophet."
The Jews did not believe that he had been born blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them,
"Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?"
His parents answered,
"We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but we do not know how it is that he sees, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself."
His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age. Ask him." So, for a second time, they called the man who had been born blind. And they said to him,
"Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner."
"I do not know whether this man is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see."
"What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?"
"I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become one of his disciples?"
Then they reviled him, saying,
"You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from."
"Here is an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys his will. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing.
You were born entirely in sins, and you are trying to teach us?
And they drove him out. Jesus heard that they had driven him, and that they had driven him out. And so when he found him, he said,
Do you believe in the Son of Man?
And who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him.
You have seen him, and the one speaking with you is he.
Lord, I believe.
And he worshipped him.
I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind.
Some of the Pharisees near him heard this and said to him,
Surely we are not blind, are we?
Well, if you were blind, you would not have sinned. But now that you say we see, your sin remains.
And again, the Jews were divided because of these many words. Many of them were saying,
He has a demon and is out of his mind. Why listen to him?
Others were saying,
These are not the words of one who has a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?
The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. Fire. Fire. It's complex, it's mysterious, and it's destructive. In the United States, we've seen an alarming level of wildfires this year. Over 2 million acres have been scorched, which is 10 times higher than the average at this point in the year. Some people are not the same after these raging fires. And we look with pain at their burnt bodies, and we tremble with fear gazing at their simmering homes. In the Bible, stories of God's fiery wrath are used to motivate or control believers. Even the Inquisition used flames to compel heretics to recant. However, fire is also life-giving. In fact, some species of trees need fire for their seeds to be released from the cones. You see, fire also invites community. When we cuddle up in front of the fireplace on a rainy morning, or when we tell stories around campfires, fire illuminates, fire warms, fire provides life. Many religions use the ambiguity of fire's destructive and beneficial principles as an important symbol of the divine. Christianity's primary liturgical fire is what we call the new fire. Has anybody heard this term before, the new fire? I expected Vicar Paul. Okay, good. So the new fire is what begins the Great Easter Vigil. This custom of lighting the new fire originates from a pagan tradition of welcoming springtime. But St. Patrick, however, broke the laws of his time by creating a new fire and dedicating it to the resurrected Christ. The new fire is also called the light of Christ, and each year it is the flames from the new fire that is used to light the new Paschal candle for the first time. You see, for us Christians, Christ is our light. Christ illumines our pathway. It is Jesus' life, death, and resurrection that enlightens us to see God's activity in the world more fully and palpably. Jesus' teachings make visible what we cannot see, and then it also stimulates our growth. And with this in mind, we recall the burning bush where God mysteriously beckoned Moses to save God's people. And we also remember the pillar of fire that led Israelites from slavery into freedom. Much like that pillar of fire, the Paschal candle's light will guide us from place to place to place to place during our Easter vigil. And as we heard in the reading from Ephesians, it is this light, Christ's light, that inspires our actions and our ministries and our mission in the church. And so if it's Christ's light that inspires our actions and our ministries and our service of the world, then today's gospel reading surely has something to share to us. You see, in today's gospel reading, we, like the disciples and the Pharisees, can very easily get caught up in the details. Everyone in this story seemed like they wanted to find the cause of the blindness. Was it this man, or was it the parents? And while this might seem like an ancient understanding of difference, this is still a belief in society today. Those who are differently abled are sometimes told that they did something wrong, or that their parents did something wrong, or that their families did something wrong. Blame is the name of the game. Yet Jesus reminds us that blame is not the game, for it was not the parents or the man, but rather he was simply born that way. And verses 3 and 4 often trip people up so that they too cannot see the larger picture of this narrative. For it is the way that our English-speaking editor translated it from the Greek that almost appears to argue that God made this person blind so that Jesus could then heal him. But we must be very careful with this translation. Now remember, the original Greek text, it doesn't have punctuation. It doesn't have chapter numbers. It doesn't have verses. These were all added much later by editors. Furthermore, Grant says, the crux of this causal assertion is focused on the statement that we heard read. So that God's works might be revealed in him. However, here's the tricky thing. That phrase, so that, it's not there in Greek. It's not there. An alternative translation might read like this. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but he was born blind, period. But, in order that the works of God might be apparent in him, it is necessary for us to work the works of the one having sent me while it is day. Night comes when nobody is able to work. Did you catch the difference there? Because this new translation has a completely different emphasis for those verses. The alternative version is focused on God's works being seen and does not feel the need to address the causality. Okay, is anybody following me with this so far? Okay, got like 3 of you. It's fine if you're not. Because here's the thing. It doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter at all. In fact, the whole point of the story is to prove that it doesn't matter. You see, each character in this story is completely focused on the idea that this person is blind and why this person is blind, that they miss out on the person altogether. You see, the focus of the story is not the past. The focus of the story is the future in God. It is not that this man is born blind, but it's rather that this man is a person. And don't we do this all the time in our culture? We define others by limiting factors or the difficult things they've experienced. We say, he is divorced. We say, she is widowed. We define ourselves or others by their political party. We label someone on their ability, calling them handicapped or mentally ill or physically sick. We label them as old or young or smart or stupid. We call people black or white or Latino or Muslim or Jewish or illegal or legal or us or them or gay or straight or trans or queer. And the list goes on. And I want to be clear. It's not to say that labels cannot be helpful. They can. However, what Jesus reminds us today is that when we define people by a simple factor, then we often miss the whole person. And if you don't believe my translation, let's look back at the text. Because it was emphasized in today's gospel after the man could see when those around him could no longer recognize him. You see, although they saw this man every day, and presumably his outward appearance is the same, and while the only thing that was actually changed in the story was that he could now see, only one factor, his blindness, is what had come to define him. That one thing had become his whole identity. And it was with that one factor, that one thing, that ultimately defined his full self. And in that, he lost his life. Yet Jesus goes on to remind us and to reveal to us that it was not the man who was blind, but rather it was those who focused on the blindness who could not truly see. Those who could not see a complex and beautiful man were in fact blind themselves. And we are blind. We are blind when we do not recognize that all humans have goals, have wants, have desires. We are truly blind when we fail to recognize the importance of wholeness on an emotional, a social, a physical, an intellectual, and a spiritual level. We become blind when we forget about the humanity of all people. And we all are blind. Or as Ephesians put it in the first reading that we read out loud today, we are darkness. We are not in darkness, but we are darkness. We fail to see, and we prevent others from seeing. We do not expose the truth, but instead we conceal it for our own power. We do not illuminate, but rather we cast shadows on others. And so this is that moment in the sermon where you get to do some digging, some soul searching. So pull out that note card that you've got in your bulletin. I think it might be all the way inside that 40 days next to that droplet. We'll get to all these different things soon. Pull out your note card. There should be a pen in front of you in the pew. A little Wicker Park Lutheran Church swag right there in front of you. So grab your note card and your pen. And take a quick moment to do this. Record words, phrases, sentences, or pictures of the ways that you personally fail to see the full humanity of the other. So record words, phrases, sentences, or pictures of the ways you personally fail to see the full humanity of the other. And maybe it's in labels, as I talked about already, or maybe it's in your approach, which I didn't even get into, or maybe it's in your own stubborn certainty like the Pharisees, which we didn't even touch yet. But what are the ways that you fail to see the full humanity of the other? Go ahead, take a moment to jot it down. Don't worry, you're not going to share with your neighbors, so be honest. And only if you ask me to will I collect them and read them out loud, so write your name on it. I'm just kidding. Nobody laughed at that one. So what are the ways that you fail to recognize the collective humanity of others, you personally? So take just a second or two more to finish up your thoughts. We just about done? And when you're done writing, you can turn upside down if you want, but at least pass them into the center. I'm not going to read them, I promise. Some of you looked at me like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Just pass them to the center. Any note cards? Note cards. Thank you. Note cards. Note cards. Thank you. Thank you. Note cards. Note cards. Not going to read them. Tim, you got some more. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody more? Did I get everybody's? Right, now I'm going to auction off. I'm going to read yours unless you give a big, big offering today. I'm just joking. I'm just joking. All right, so I'm going to put these note cards in here. Because you see, you've got these note cards in front of you. And we so often want to hold tightly onto these note cards. But friends in Christ, Ephesians reminds you today that you were once darkness, but now in the Lord, you are light. So live as children of the light, for the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true. Try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For everything exposed by the light becomes visible. For everything that becomes visible is light. So instead of grasping that card today, we remember the new fire. The fire that is the light of Christ. We say goodbye to our inability to see the other, and at the same time, we work to glimpse God's presence in all people. For it is in baptism that we are claimed as God's beloved. And then we are sent, as we are near the end of every baptismal part of the liturgy, to be the light of the world, to be reflections of Christ's light. So in a few weeks, on the evening of that Easter vigil, you'll arrive and we'll hand you a little candle just like this. You'll think it's from Christmas Eve, but we actually borrow that from the Easter vigil for Christmas Eve. But you're going to get one of these candles. And what we're going to do, see if I can do this without burning myself.
Don't worry, Mom, I won't burn myself. It'll be much easier because it won't be dancing like this, but we're going to light the Paschal candle from that new fire, and then we're going to pass that same light to each one of you. So grab your candle out, because we're going to do it now. And we're going to go ahead and tip the unlit candle towards the lit one, and we're going to pass it around for friends. You are children of the light. Go ahead and tip the unlit one towards the lit one. Perfect. And then just pass it down your pew. You got it. Pass it around. And kids, if you've got some of the little electric ones, go ahead and... Yeah, go ahead and tip the unlit one. It'll save me time from scraping the wax off tomorrow. And I'm going to do two more here, and then you can pass it around. You got it? Be careful with it, but I did do fire safety training this morning with Jordan and Mary, so we are ready with the fire extinguishers if something happens. So today I took those note cards away from you because I don't want you to grasp onto those note cards and the labels and the ways that we fail to see humanity, but instead I want you to grasp on to the light of Christ. Because on that night of the Easter Vigil, in this place, among God's people, with the feeling of God's love and grace surrounding us, we remember that we are called to be Christ's light. We recall the stories that invite us to expose injustice. And we remember to look towards Christ's peace as the light of our path. For you, beloved, you, Joy, you, Kathy, you, George, you, Cheryl, you, Paul, you, all of you, are light. And so live as a child of the light. For Christ is your light. Amen.